Ahoy, Vachon. How's the French say, Vachon? This is the Brown Briefly, where less is more, more or less, coming to you live over KVSH 101.9 FM, Voice of Vachon, your island connection. Please make us part of your day. And be advised that our assertions and views, which can modestly be described as progressive persuasion, do not in any way reflect the opinions of KVSH or Voice of Vachon.
And welcome to the Brown Briefly. This is our weekly podcast and radio show that's emanating from the Voice of Vachon. We're located on beautiful Vachon Island, Washington, and that was the voice of Brian Brown, who was the creator of the Brown Briefly. Brian was a lifelong editor and writer for Time magazine. He moved out to the island and began the Briefly, and he brought his very high standards of intelligent discussion about current events and laced with humor and empathy. Brian's motto, as he said, was less is more, more or less, which I always liked. So let me go around the table and introduce the Briefly panel. We have our legal consensus builder, former Washington State Assistant Attorney General, and two-time Fulbright scholar, Mr. Craig Ballas. Good morning, Craig.
Good morning. I'll second that motion.
Okay, let me make sure I got your mic up here. Sorry, there we go.
Hello again.
There he is.
Welcome back.
Yeah.
And you could take it down a little.
We'll take it down just a touch. Just a touch.
Bring the guitar up a little more.
Yeah, right. So we also have our defender of justice, mariner, cyclist, and former top secret engineer, Kevin Jones, via Zoom. And are you there, Kevin?
Hello? I'm here. Can you hear me okay?
Okay, now we can hear you. Yes, sir, we can. Good.
Okay, and just to let you know for a technical detail, my phone is waiting in the waiting room just in case the computer audio doesn't get me connected to you.
Oh, okay. No, so far you're loud and clear. No problem. I had to boost you a little, but you're there.
All right, perfect.
Next, we have historian and professor, party animal. This is from an older one here. And down under aficionado, Mr. Bruce Hallman. Good morning, Bruce.
Hey, good to be here. Talking about bringing microphones up and down, it was at the ice cream social of the Friday night of festival. And the band, Paul Caldwell and Dan and Gene and, Barney, whole group of folks. And at one point, Dan asked me, was a bass loud enough? And as a bass player, there's never enough bass.
Never enough bass.
So I said, bring it up.
More cowbell, right? Yeah, okay.
Exactly.
Bring it up. Are you a bass player?
I am.
I didn't know that, Bruce.
Yes.
I did not know
We're going to add that to your resume.
Yeah. I thought you were a sax player.
Well, in high school, I started playing saxophone in junior high school, but then they needed a bass player, an upright bass player for the jazz band.
So
I got tapped.
Upright, a big bass.
Yeah, a real bass.
Okay. Yeah, the one where you have to hold your fingers live long and prosper, right?
Exactly.
Yeah.
So you didn't have to perfect that resting bass face.
No. I had to perfect the sort of furrowed brow bass face.
There you go. That's the one.
Amy's got it.
Oh, no. It's very different.
Mm-hmm. Yes. All right. And so we also, speaking of Amy, we have our fairy maven, our part-time political head of Vachon household, playwright, and full-time shenanigans coordinator, Amy Dreyer.
Good morning,
Amy. I'm sitting here behind the big blue switch of the broadcast studio of downtown Vachon. I'm Truman O'Brien, and today, this is an interesting day today. It was scheduled to be a quote-unquote Truman Show, which is one of our shows where we have no guests. And generally, that means that we have to work on coming up with some small talk issues to discuss. But there was a little slip-up in the fact that we had no one scheduled to host.
It's summertime.
I know. I think, Kevin, it was your turn, but you're out on your boat, so you were not aware. You're breaking up.
I think I dropped the baton in the relay. I dropped baton in the relay.
In the sound? Yeah. Mm-hmm. Well, anyway, last night, Craig and I are playing poker together for the first time face-to-face in quite a while. And at the very end of the night, Craig goes, hey, who's hosting tomorrow? And I went, gosh, I don't know. So I got home and I looked and I went, no one is. So I tried to quickly put something together and we'll see.
Well, yeah, you put together a nice intro and then we'll all join forces to talk about ersatz.
Ersatz.
Yeah.
Well, this group never has any problem
That's true.
I like the warning was whatever, but I think it would have been way more fun if we all just showed up at the studio.
Yeah, right. Oh, yeah.
Just that, like, what?
What?
Well, no, it's you. It's
that's kind of no, what no, we did.
Yeah, it's kind of what we did. That's right.
Whatever. I read up on Kalshi today, and I checked my stats, checked my bets, you know.
All right.
Yeah.
Well, Craig, how about what you do this week? Let's go to you.
Not much. I saw The Odyssey, which I thoroughly enjoyed. It's not a bad story. You know, this kind of lasted for about 2,600 years.
But was it historically accurate?
Yeah, it's funny the amount of controversy over everybody finds
it's
something,
ridiculous.
You know?
Ridiculous.
I thought it was really good. I liked the a couple of the things they did in it, the Trojan horse, you know, the Trojan horse is always this big rolling giant. This one, you see the inside of the horse where they're all packed in there. And frankly, I don't know how they ever got into Troy because the thing must have stunk to high heaven.
they could have smelled it coming, right?
That's right. I did enjoy that movie. Those almost 3 hours just went by. Very rapidly. Right. Truman mentioned our poker game last night. Unfortunately, Truman and I didn't exactly come out positively, but we came out just slightly negatively.
Which to me is a win. I mean,
I
only lost $4. Come on, man. What a deal.
That's right. And this evening, I just wanted this evening, I'm going prospectively. I have a rehearsal for the Friday night coup. Gathering. I'm singing Zoot Suit Riot.
Ooh. Oh my gosh!
So that should be fun. Yeah,
it's gonna be great.
Well, let's hope so.
Well, I'm speaking proactively as well. You know, come on, Amy, how about you? What did you do this week?
This week, I'll give you a little more later, maybe when we talk about it. But it was interesting to hear from Councilmember Mosqueda. She came and spent about an hour and a half doing a little briefing for chamber folks, and that was really good, really interesting. And this weekend, it was nice. Got together and grilled out for a friend's birthday, which was always good. And
I got the inside report on that. Said it was pretty darn good.
Oh yeah, no, we don't mess around on the grill.
I guess,
And because the vegetarian in the household was gone, I broke out the beef tallow.
That's what she said.
Uh-huh. Yeah, and that was, you know, it's always a good time when the beef tallow comes out. Mm-hmm. RFK would be so proud of us.
Yeah.
And what we did to that zucchini. But actually it was just kind of nice, you know, with festival over. Yeah. And I feel like we're kind of settling into the meat of summer, you know, like go up and see some music here, go blackberry picking there, grab some crabs there, you know.
Yeah.
Perfect. Really nice. Yeah. Mm-hmm.
All right. Bruce, how about you?
Well, kind of a busy week. one of my granddaughters just turned 23, so she came out to the island with her partner and a couple friends. And so we had a long weekend birthday party for my granddaughter, which is, it's always nice when they come, but it's also nice when they leave. but had a great time. Took them out crabbing. They'd never really been out crabbing. Ellie, my granddaughter, had been out with us before, but the others, her friends, haven't. So I mean, it's a great experience if you've never been out on Puget Sound, pulling up a crab pot that's jam full of Dungeness crab, and it's just sort of like, wow. And they're going everywhere, and people watching their toes getting clipped off and all that kind of stuff. So it was great. But so that went on. Also today at the Mukai Farm and Garden, they're having a 100th birthday party for Yvonne Cooperberg. It's going on right now. So make your way over to Mukai and help celebrate Yvonne's 100th birthday.
Wow. Just island treasure.
Yeah, very much so. Let's see. The other thing that was very interesting this weekend is on Saturday afternoon, there was a memorial service for Jay Becker.
Oh, yeah.
And those of you who knew Jay, Jay was the editor of the Beachcomber. Mm-hmm. He bought the Beachcomber, he and his wife, Joan, bought the Beachcomber in the early 80s, and yeah. He edited it and owned it until 1996 when he sold it to Sound Publishing. But it was interesting. His three boys were there, and they all talked about his growing up with Jay and growing up in a newspaper family.
Yeah.
And, it was just sort of fascinating. And also his granddaughter was there, who just graduated in history from the University of Puget Sound and was a student of one of my colleagues, Nancy Bristow.
Who
works with us on 250. So it was just great. But it was interesting to also to see a lot of the old Beachcomber reporters and people were there. So it was just a good time to reflect on how important a small local weekly paper is to defining what a community is. And the Beachcomber has done that, I think, very well.
I agree. And speaking of Yvonne, though, did you ever know Joel, her husband?
Yeah, right.
Yeah, he's the guy who started Four Stewards.
An
interesting character
very
as well.
Interesting. And they were interesting. Sort of, we were all in Tallahassee, Florida, at the same time.
Oh.
This is back in the 60s. I was a graduate student. Didn't know them, but Joel and Yvonne and their family were there.
Oh,
and
so,
yeah. And their son, Mike, who just retired from NOAA, is now the director of the Whale Museum in Friday Harbor.
Oh,
and
no
just
kidding.
Last year just moved to Friday Harbor, so it's in the area.
Oh, that's fantastic. I had no idea. Huh. Kevin, let's see how your audio is doing. Hello, Kevin. It sounds like it's not doing too well. You know what? I see a little chat there. Let's see if Kevin has something to say to us.
Kevin's week was full of delightful things.
Oh, there you are.
Yeah.
There you are.
Letting my phone into the meeting.
No.
Can you hear me now?
Okay, try it now.
Or let my phone into the room and probably talk to you that way.
Well, let me look here. Let me look here and see if...
the waiting room.
Zoom. Yeah, that's what I'm looking for right now. Is it right there? Yeah, I think
technical
that's
detail.
Yeah, let's see if we can get some reverb going
right.
on.
Now let's see how you sound. Okay, try it now, Kevin.
Kevin.
No, it's not working.
Kevin.
No, I don't hear you.
No. So Kevin's been delightfully sailing up north in the Canadian San Juans.
Yes.
His days have been filled with beautiful blue skies, delightful weather, wonderful company. We're all very jealous.
I think he sabotaged his own communication here so he can go back to his vacation.
Yeah. You know what I wanted to ask him about was the plane crash up on Susha. That's one of my favorite islands to go to.
Yeah, so that was very dramatic. There's been some tough stuff in the local news cycle.
Oh, yeah,
it's amazing that everybody came out of there okay.
Oh yeah.
Yeah. I thought of the treetop flyers.
Oh yeah. And flying back from New York this week, I saw lots of forest fires in Washington. Yeah. It was unbelievable the amount of smoke and flames. Well, Kevin, if you can see if you can work on that, and we'll get you back here in just a minute.
Put one arm up in the air with some tinfoil on your hand.
Yeah, or maybe one of those little tinfoil hats, you know.
That's right. Mm-hmm.
Make it pointy.
My week was pretty fun. I went to my Vietnam Army unit's reunion in Colorado Springs, and we flew into Denver and rented a car and drove to Colorado Springs. It's a little over an hour. And I looked at the fare from Denver to Colorado Springs, and I looked at the price of renting a car. And I wanted to rent a car anyway when I got to the Springs. So I went, it makes way more sense to rent a car in Denver and drive down. And then I met one of my Army buddies from New Jersey in Denver, so he rode down with us, which is fun. And when I rented a car, I requested just a sedan, right? Well, they gave me a Hyundai SUV, 7-passenger SUV, which was perfect because when we got down to Colorado Springs, one day we said, hey, let's drive up to Pikes Peak. So we all piled into that Hyundai and drove all the way up to the top of Pikes Peak. And now, you know, I'm used to flying and I'm at 6,000 feet cabin altitude all the time. I thought, yeah, this will be a piece of cake, right?
Once you get over 11.
Oh, baby. It's 14, too, I think it is.
Yeah, it's 14 up there.
Yep.
Yeah, and man, I'll tell you what, I was a little woozy.
Oh, yeah.
I was surprised.
Hypoxia.
Yeah. Mm-hmm. But anyway, we did that. That was fun. And then I didn't do a very good job of planning of the time because we flew back to Seattle on Wednesday. Thursday morning, we got up and flew to New York. So we didn't even come home. We just stayed in the city because there was just no sense trying to come home and leave early in the next morning. So we flew to New York. In New York, I got to see on Friday night, we went to see the Buena Vista Social Club, which is an amazing production. I'll talk more about that in the small talk thing. And then Saturday night, one of my other Army buddies that did not make it to the reunion, lives in New York. So he came out and had dinner with us on Saturday night, he and his wife, which was really fun. And then I went to see the arena concert version of Les Mis at Radio City Music Hall, which was also fantastic. just amazing.
Kevin's got his hand up.
Oh, Kevin, are you there? Wait a minute, let's try that again.
Kevin, can you hear me?
I admitted him, but let's try it again. Kevin, try it now.
Hey,
there you are.
I can hear stuff now. Awesome.
And we can hear you.
I'm going to do an adjustment here on my end of the volume just so we don't get any crosstalk going.
That tinfoil hat worked.
Tell us about it.
Yeah, great to be able to join you. Last time we chatted, we were at Angler's Anchorage over there in Brentwood Bay, and we made the huge trip around the north end of the Saanich Peninsula to Sydney,
right.
One of our favorite places to hang out. And then we're eyeing the weather about crossing Harrow Strait, which can be, in a small boat like ours, can be a little bit challenging.
You bet it can.
So it turned out the day of departure was supposed to be blowing like 25. And we thought, maybe we'll just stay here in Sydney. But it turned out that evening, the wind died down. We had a beautiful crossing over to Garrison Bay, which, as historian Hallman will tell us, is the site of English camp. During the Pig War, during the time of friction between the U.S. and Canada, and all balled up in the question about who really owns which islands that are out there between Vancouver Island and the mainland. And it turned out that I think it was the King of Norway decided that the San Juan Islands belong to the U.S. and the Gulf Islands belong to Canada based on the amount of water that flows between Harrow Strait versus Rosario Strait. And apparently more water flowed through Harrow, meaning that was geography had blessed us that's a natural border. Anyway, so we stayed in Garrison, and then we hopped over to Roach Harbor, and that's where we are right now.
All right.
Yeah, if I can interject, the treaty between Britain and the United States stipulated that the border would be down the main channel between Vancouver Island and the mainland. And of course, what was in dispute was the Gulf. What's the main island? Because there's the main channel. Because there's two, Harrow Strait and Rosario Strait. And so, as you stated, the arbitrator, and you would know all about that. Arbitrators try and satisfy as much as everybody as possible, if possible. And he decided Harrow because of the flow of water.
Yeah. I'll be darned.
I resemble that, Mark.
Yeah, I was going to say. And Kevin, you're now at Rosario, you said? Or Roach?
Roach Harbor.
We are currently in Roach Harbor.
Oh, Roach Harbor. Okay. So you weren't, you missed the great plane crash up at Susha, huh?
Well, you know, we heard about it, so we didn't participate in it because we were basically in Canada at the time.
Yeah.
But Shallow Bay is where the plane landed, and right. Understand that that's basically a bay on the east side of Susha Island, one of the first places that Susie and I anchored when we chartered a boat some time ago.
Yeah.
And it is small. And the picture that we saw was the plane up on the rocks. So fortunately, they could get the passengers out before the plane burst into fire, apparently.
Yeah. Actually, it's on the west side. Echo Bay is on the east side, if I remember correctly.
Oh, very good. Thanks.
Yeah. Well, very interesting. All right. Well, so, and I told you about my day. So today is a significant day. Today is National Milk Chocolate Day. And milk chocolate is the most widely recognized U.S. food observance anywhere.
I forgot to bring some.
Oh, man.
I should have brought some. Somebody should have brought a box of milk chocolate.
Well, if I just.
Although I much prefer dark chocolate.
Yeah.
Oh, no, not me.
Oh,
I'm a milk chocolate guy. No.
In a Reese's application, though.
Well,
I'll take a milk.
I'll take a. While we're on it, I'm a real devotee of peanut butter cups.
Oh, yeah.
Trader Joe's dark chocolate. Oh, man. Yeah.
Milk chocolate day.
They've got Reese's beat a long way.
I don't know. The Reese, that classic combo. And also, what are the Easter eggs? Not the Cadbury eggs, but the little Easter eggs. Those are better in milk chocolate, too. You know,
well,
sometimes.
Actually, nothing beats a spoonful of peanut butter dipped in Nutella.
Yeah.
In Nutella?
Yeah.
Well, it's funny you mention that. When I was teaching in the Czech Republic, the peanut butter is hard to come by. So because everything is made out of hazelnuts Nutella and that sort of thing. But I was able to find a thing of peanut butter, and I was able to. This was at Easter, and I was able to buy a chocolate Easter bunny. So I was able to dip it in.
Ooh, there you go.
Dip those ears in, right?
That's right.
That's great. That's great.
Kevin, that's what junk food is. Exactly. Just heads up. Yeah.
That's real junk food. Yeah.
We're big Nutella fans. So, you know, if you leave Nutella winter on a boat, it turns into a very interesting thing that you might not want to eat.
You know, I can imagine. Okay, and it's also National Soccer Day, which, by the way, globally is recognized as sports observance as the over 270 million players worldwide. Can you imagine?
But they don't call it Soccer Day.
Football. It's football. Come on, we know this, but isn't that interesting? Why the heck did we call ours football? That's the stupidest thing.
You know, I remember reading this around the World Cup that there actually in England, there was some sort of originally way back in the day, it was like a football. Like it did come from England, the word football.
Oh.
So it has, like it's been associated. I don't know why we went with American football, but
there was a soccer.
I remember vaguely.
And where did the word rugby come from? Mm-hmm.
Well,
Australian
school.
Was it?
Yeah, school. It's a school.
Oh, darn. I thought maybe it's the rug burns you get when you crash on the grass. You know,
but in Australia, New Zealand, because they play rugby, they play Australian rules football. They play what we call soccer, or they call football, and so they call American football gridiron.
Gridiron, because that's
the original. And actually, back in the 1880s and 90s, it was often called gridiron. In the United States.
I was thinking of that. There had to be some name, but that's perfect. Gridiron. We ought to put together a movement called the Gridiron Movement, started by the Brown Briefleys right
here. Thank goodness.
You take a trip to Canton, Ohio.
Yeah. There you go.
I've got one more. It is Lionize Your Favorite Self-Loathing Homophobe Day, celebrated at the National Cathedral.
Oh, yeah.
That's going on right now
on
my phone.
Indeed. All you need is a few war criminals and a couple racketeers and a national, a sacred national place. And there you go.
We've got that in spades.
There's so many choices.
Sort of fake the words because you don't know them.
All right. So I got some birthdays that I think are kind of cool. 1866, Beatrix Potter. She died in 1943. I didn't realize that she had lived that long. 1929, Jacqueline Kennedy Onassis. She died in 1994. In 1947, Sally Struthers. And by the way, she was born in Portland, Oregon, which I thought was kind of cool. It's from All in the Family. And last, in 1966, Liz Cheney. And that surprises me, too. That
does. It surprised me.
I was thinking she would be older than that, but she's not. 1966.
She almost missed all of the 60s.
She almost did. Mm-hmm. Yeah, well, she did, actually.
Yeah, she did. She was 4 years old when, at the end of the 60s.
Exactly. So today in history, this for you, Bruce. Mm-hmm. 1945, the U.S. Army B-25 crashed into the 79th floor of the Empire State Building, killing 14 people. Also during that event, elevator girl Betty Lou Oliver survived a fall of 75 stories after that airplane crashed into the building. And she's still, it remains a world record for longest survived elevator fall.
That brings up a question.
Yes.
And that is, what is the best way to survive a falling elevator?
That's a
Does
good
anyone
question.
Know?
We should ask her.
You jump.
No.
You jump right before it lands.
It's funny. Most people actually give that answer. A majority of people say the best way to survive.
Lie flat.
It is. It's the life. A little different than our crash scenario. You want to make the accident last as long as possible.
Right.
Which is kind of, I think, what people think of when they think of jumping.
Right.
But your jump would have to be timed perfectly.
And how could you do that?
Not only that, but you'd be dropping at about 50 miles an hour, and you know your jump is like 5 miles an hour going the other direction.
Yeah.
You would destroy your lower body in that kind of scenario. No, lying flat on your back is the best way to survive.
Well, you absorb most of the impact.
Right.
As we learned after our little crash, if you're going 50 miles an hour, this is an interesting fact. If you're going 50 miles an hour and you want to decelerate to 0 miles an hour and not exceed 6 Gs.
Six Gs are death.
6 Gs or more. I mean, more than 6 Gs is not good. How far do you think it would take you to stop?
Kevin? Kevin's calculating it right now in his head.
Do you know, Kevin?
I do not know. I'm going to guess like a tenth of a mile.
No, surprisingly, 9 feet 4 inches. That's
nine.
It.
Oh.
9 feet 4 inches to go from 50 to zero and not exceed 6 Gs. So there you go. That's why
you want to make the stop last as long as possible.
Isn't that interesting, huh? I thought that was interesting. Anyway, okay. Also in 1945. U.S. Senate ratifies the United Nations Charter by a vote of 89-2. I don't know who the two was. You happen to know, Bruce?
No. Lindsey Graham was one of them.
Could very well be. Very well be.
And Mitch McConnell was the other one.
The other one, right. Well, Mitch McConnell is probably the one for sure. For sure. And last, 1954, On the Waterfront, which is directed by Ilya Kazan, starring Marlon Brando and Eva Marie Saint, was released. And it was the Academy Awards Best Picture in 1955. How about that? I thought that was interesting.
A skinny Marlon Brando.
Oh, indeed. Oh, I got one more. 1960, the U.S. Republican National Convention selected Richard Nixon as their candidate. Oh, boy.
Chicago.
The
indeed.
Hits keep coming.
Indeed.
Bad day.
Yeah.
All right, so hey, I've got. That's all I got. So
that's all I got.
Small talk, though. We got tiny talk.
But for small talk, since I spent about 15 hours on an airplane this last week, I got to thinking about jet engines, and I'll bet you guys don't know how a jet engine works. Well, Kevin, you probably do, but I'm going to tell you since I'm. I'm sure you're fascinated by this.
It's too bad we don't have our television for radio set up.
It is true. We could show some demos here.
That's right.
But visualize this. You have one long shaft, and on the front of that shaft is a compressor. And that compressor takes the air in and begins to compress that air by stages, down, 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 down. And using Boyle's law, anytime you increase the pressure, you increase the temperature. So by the time it gets to those burner cans, that stuff is super hot and super compressed. Then it goes into the burner cans where misted jet fuel is sprayed on and ignited. And everybody thinks, oh, jet fuel, boy, high octane stuff. No, jet fuel is like kerosene. It's like diesel. In fact, Craig, your car would run perfectly fine on Jet A.
Mm-hmm.
It's diesel. Mm-hmm. That's all it is. So it burns. So it expands that gas as it goes through some turbines on the back of that shaft, which turns the front of the shaft and goes out, and the difference in pressure from where the air goes in to where it comes out produces thrust. Now, that is the basis of a jet engine, turbojet engine. Now, you get turbojets, which are that, and then you have fan jets. Now, those great big engines you see on airplanes, that engine is not that big at all. In fact, it's pretty tiny by comparison. That whole thing is the diameter of that fan, that big fan out in front. And 80 to 90% of the thrust developed by that engine is from the air that's being pulled by that fan. Mm-hmm. So it's really like you're driving big props mm-hmm. out there in front, which I think is kind of interesting. Mm-hmm. Very little of the thrust, 20 to 30% of the thrust comes from the actual jet engine. The rest is from that fan. And so I just wanted to tell you one quick thing about that. Operating them, I've flown both the turbojet and fan jet. Turbojets respond instantly. As soon as you, the turbojet engine is usually connected by a cable. So you push the thing and the cable goes out to the fuel controller. Boy, you've got instant response. A fan, generally those fans are electronic. So your throttle is nothing but a potentiometer, just like we've got here on the board. But it sends a signal out, electrical signal out to the controller, which... And consequently, because of the size of that fan, there's a delay in the spool up.
Yeah.
So if you go from zero thrust and push it forward, there's a good 3 to 5 second delay before you get that thrust. So flying the thing requires you to think ahead of what you're going to need before you need it. That's the bad news. The good news is on the dial that you're looking at to set your power, there's a little indicator of where it's going to be. So you can just push that indicator up to where you want it, and then you wait for it to catch up for there. But it's a little tricky to fly. One more thing.
And Truman, what about throttling?
Sorry?
Does it take a similar time to de-throttle?
De-throttle. To de-throttle? That's usually pretty instantaneous, surprisingly.
Okay.
Yeah, you pull the power off, you're done. I mean, it comes right off. You'll slow right down. One more thing. To start a jet engine, you need air pressure. And that's usually provided by either what we call a Huffer truck or a big, big bottle of compressed air or the auxiliary power unit that's in the tail. And that auxiliary power produces that compressed air that I was talking about. It takes some of that super hot, high pressure air and ports that down to the starter. That's what turns the engines. Until you get to the big GE engines or the Rolls-Royce Trent engines, those are what they call electric engines. And those things actually have an electric starter just like a car. And also when you're starting the engine with air, you run up to get a certain percentage of RPM. And then you introduce the fuel. You turn on, open the fuel valves, and that turns on the igniters, and boom, off it goes. With these new big electric engines, a FADEC, that's a full authority digital electronic or engine control, that does everything. So all you do is you say start, and that thing spins up the engine with that starter until it gets to the proper RPM. Then it introduces the fuel and the spark. And it takes off. And then that starter actually keeps going and it becomes a generator. So at first it's turning the engine, and then the engine begins turning the starter, making it a generator then, which is kind of interesting.
That's better than on most cars. If the starter continues to engage.
Oh, it's bad. That's bad. That's bad. Yeah. Yeah. Well, you think about it. We've got a starter and an alternator in a car. In those airplanes, you just got one thing, and it's the starter generator.
Still plenty of things that go wrong.
Yeah. Oh, yeah. Oh, yeah.
Especially if it's Boeing. Oh, no. Yeah.
But
careful. Kevin's going to be upset.
Yeah. The other thing about
that. Well, the reliability question's interesting. There's ETOPS was, I think, a move forward in engine reliability. And somebody said, what does ETOPS mean? And the guy presenting that information says, I can never remember that. I just think engines turn or people swim.
That's what it stands for.
All right.
Yeah, engines are right.
I like it.
What ETOPS is for the long distance. It's the what allows you to use two engines to cross the oceans. That's what that's all about.
Okay.
And a specially certified engine that's the reliability of which is pretty amazing.
And the swimming part and the ocean crossing part, that's how that goes together.
Exactly.
Yeah, sure.
Exactly right. Mm-hmm. The last thing about these electric engines is that the pressurization for normal airplanes comes from that bleed air I was talking about. They take some of that hot high pressure air, and they pump that into the airplane. And you have a mixing valve there that mixes cold air and that hot air to get you the proper temperature. And then that there's an outflow valve that adjusts to set the pressure inside the airplane. Yeah. With these new electric engines, they actually have a big compressor that's electronically operated that compresses that air to push it into the cabin. They don't use bleed air at all.
I think I felt better not knowing these things.
sorry.
Yeah.
But
I mean, the engine part is cool. It was the cabin pressure. It's like, really? Yeah. Just they've got a little mixer, you know, just kind of flows through this little bend. I just was like, you know, it's just magic. It's just the actual undefeatable science of something.
Yeah.
Not some sort of part that somebody manufactured on a Friday afternoon.
Yeah. You don't want to think about it. Yeah. No. Flying tube, you know, at 500 miles an hour, 30,000 feet, you know.
Yeah, I have to admit that I can remember one morning taking off from Fairbanks, 4 o'clock in the morning, and the front end of the jet is way different than when you're sitting at the back, because you're sitting right on top of that nose gear, so it's bouncing and crashing and making lots of noise and flopping around, and you're accelerating to 140 knots down the runway, and I'm going ripping down the runway at 4 o'clock in the morning going, what the hell am I doing? I have to admit that I did do that.
Maybe not the best time
Probably not the best time to be thinking that. But it's true. I did it's 4 o'clock in the morning, in the nose of a thing going 140 knots, down the runway. But that's what
I always
do.
Loved the answer you gave me, and I mean this in the best way.
Yes.
Early on in your instruction of me.
Yeah.
I said, weren't you kind of overwhelmed by the responsibility of flying these big jets with all these passengers that are back there that are totally relying on you? And I'll paraphrase, you can correct me if I'm wrong. Yeah. Your response was, no, not really, because if I got there, they'd get
there. You're going to get there. that's basically what I said, I kind of worry about my rear. My rear gets there, theirs will get there. So that's all. Well, only one more thing, and that's that big Trent engine they're making, that Rolls-Royce is making. The diameter of that fan on the front of that puppy is 148 inches. I mean, that is huge.
Wow.
The diameter of the fuselage of a 737, which I used to fly, that's 144 inches.
Wow.
So that engine is four inches bigger than in the fuselage of a 737. How's that? Okay.
Go ahead, Kevin.
Airplanes.
Say again, Kevin.
There's so many things about airplanes, like in the AWACS airplane, that dome up on top, you can stand up in, is higher than 6 feet tall. Yeah.
Exactly. Yeah.
Don't stand up in one when they're
turning.
Spooling it up.
Yeah, no, you don't want to
be
do
behind
that.
The radar when you do that.
Yeah, exactly. All right, who's got something else? Amy, what you got?
Oh, well, I will. I'll give a little community briefing, because Teresa Mosqueda did have some interesting stuff to say, as long as we're talking about interesting stuff. So, transportation tax is going to be hitting us here. So it's 0.1% sales tax increase, and allegedly Vashon and unincorporated areas will benefit disproportionately from it. So theoretically, we would have a lot of money coming our way starting next year for Vashon roads, and good news for all, but does seem like priority wise, it's going to be a lot of it's going to be centered down on Quartermaster Drive at Portage and shoring that up, so to speak, for King Tides. So I don't know. I kind of have a vision of running a vote for your favorite road repair on Vashon campaign on like Vashonites or something. Right. You should go down and take a picture of the crummiest looking road you can find and your case for getting it rebuilt so we can dream, and get it out there about rebuilding our roads here. But that's potentially very good, right?
So is there going to be some way for us to give input on that, do you think?
I mean, I think the normal channels and just kind of,
sentiment.
Yeah, and vigilance, right? Yeah. Vigilance. Hey, we're paying the sales tax. This amount of money's been generated. And what work, in fact, is happening on Vashon, right? Just that constant vigilance.
Any of that money go toward the ferries?
No, none of it goes. It's all local and it's all for roads. My understanding is for roads and ground transportation resilience.
So this is a King County tax?
It is King County. Okay. Yeah.
What is the status of the ferries and the funding? Are we going down?
No, they kept the appropriation in the last session. We're coming up for session again, but it doesn't really seem like there's an appetite for decreasing the capital budget for the ferry. So, we've got the four that are going to be on order, sequentially. And we won't see the first boat come off the line until hopefully 2032. Right. Wow. That's, they're like 2029. And I was like, and then they kept saying, well, but oops, now it's going to be later. So maybe 2031, 2032 for the first boat coming online. And of course, we won't get that boat. That'll go up north to, I think it's a Muckleteel Clinton it'll go up north. Kevin?
Curious, Amy, if there was any discussion about what Teresa Mosqueda champions as an on-demand shuttle for Vashon Mori.
Yeah, so no on-demand shuttle. That's something that they provide in West Seattle. If you get off the water taxi in West Seattle, it's almost like an Uber. And of course, we are always, I think Teresa Mosqueda has kind of turned our life around on Vashon in terms of advocacy and what she's fighting for. But that's where it's pretty uphill, right? We're no West Seattle. We're just little Vashon out here. But
I can tell you, when I went to King County to ask him about funding for our heliport that we wanted to improve, got zero response.
Yeah, no, zero. She's kind of the lone ranger out there trying to get our priorities through. So no on demand, but what is coming down the pipe that they're working on is keeping weekend water taxi, which has always sort of lived on the bubble. So working on keeping that and then also expanding into Friday and Saturday evenings. So perhaps you could eat dinner and go see a show, right?
Oh, wow.
So possible expansion. And then also the introduction of a Metro has, I think, started the appropriation for a shuttle, water taxi specific shuttle that would go between the ferry and downtown. Uptown, right? So basically, you could get the Metro bus or especially, and I'm not sure about weekends yet, but theoretically when there is no bus service, which is the other thing I actually would make a case for equitability that before we got this Uptown shuttle, that we restored later evening Metro bus service for our workers, right? For people who actually work on the island and are stocking your groceries at Thriftway and, Sunday service for your checker at IGA. So I think there's an equitability argument to be made there. But Kevin?
Yeah, I like that a lot. And I also like the notion that if there is reliable service from the water taxi to Uptown Vashon, that does allow people to not have to drive up to the north end of the island. Mm-hmm. Maybe they can leave their cars at home. But coordinating the bus and the water transportation is something that King County has taken some steps to do. So I champion them for that. Hopefully it'll make it easier for all of us to get around without having to drive our cars.
Yeah. And I think, especially on the weekend, right, like with reduced bus service that you see that shuttle, right, that runs, it'll be similar to the shuttle that they had for Strawberry Festival, right, that ran from the water taxi from the north end. So it's a step forward. I want to make that argument for reinstating evening bus service, but great step forward. So she's fighting for that. And then the other thing is the marine recovery area. Now, that's a big fun thing if you haven't heard about it is, you know, there's about, 4 miles of shoreline right now that are covered by what's known as an MRA. I live in one of them, marine recovery area. And that, you know, is like, for instance, on Outer Quartermaster, because the water got so poor because people's septic, if they even had a septic system, was failing, right? We were treating that water very poorly. So they initiated this marine recovery area, and now we have to test our septic every year, and it's got to be up to snuff, and the water's actually doing fabulously through this MRA designation. But King County is proposing to turn the entire Vashon shoreline into an MRA. Whoa. Right? So going from 4 miles of county oversight to 52 miles of county oversight.
Wow.
With this MRA designation, which, as you can imagine, has raised some eyebrows.
Well, isn't that going to be pretty expensive for the individual owners?
Well, it'd be, you know, depending, it'd be about $500 a year. I pay about $500 a year for my annual septic inspection, you know, which is a bearable expense. But the question I have is that $500 pays, you know, Shelby Middling, right? And then the county gets, I think, I don't know if they get a little bit of that or not, but that pays Shelby essentially. And then she files with the county. My question is, who's going to pay the county workers who are doing all of that administration, right? Because you go from 4 miles to 52 miles.
Mm. Yeah, it's huge.
Right. That's an insane jump.
Well, but you also have, if you fail that inspection, then it's up to the homeowner to fix it, right?
Correct. Which, you know, that you would, I would argue that that would be your liability anyway.
Of course.
Right.
Of course.
You know, like that's not a new something that's been introduced. That would be, but, you know, and one of the things that was interesting, you know, when sort of the question was asked, well, why this, you know, and my understanding is that the state folks who, you know, are measuring the water say, yeah, well, you know, Vashon, actually, we have fantastic water. Your water is great. It's beautiful. But we can only measure your water quality every 30 days.
Right.
So, you know, we want to have, and I think that's, that argument is falling pretty short.
Yeah.
Given the trade-offs.
Just so I'm clear on this, if they, in those MRAs, is it just the waterfront homes?
Correct.
Okay, so if you're like on the other side of the street, or you're up a...
depends on where the water moves.
Correct.
Right? Like,
okay.
How, you know, are you near a watershed? Mm-hmm. So, you know, it is the waterfront homes, but county's gonna county, and they could easily start to say, well, you know, you kind of live a little far up
Close
Judd Creek, or
you,
you're
yeah.
over here, or, you know,
yeah.
county's gonna county.
Because people are gonna ask that question, is that gonna apply to me? Yeah. I'm not right by the water.
And I don't think they know the answer. So,
yeah. Well, and yeah. the other question is, would there be any grants or anything available from the county to help fix some of these issues? You know,
Who knows? So Mosqueda's kind of... sense of that is it's very much time to slow walk that. The county was going to try to go and have it read out in November and right, like a snap, just implement this. And it kind of felt like it was a little bit under the radar. So slow walk on the MRA. Yeah, Kevin.
Yeah, I could certainly see, you know, people living along the creeks that are on Vashon would have the same impact if their septics were failing as if you were right on the waterfront.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm.
Well, at least as much, I would think.
Yeah.
If not more, really.
Yeah. I mean, feels like a solution in search of a problem in some ways, given that our overall water quality on the exterior is not bad. But a very viable question, right, is it what it could be on Shingle Mill and Judd Creek and some of our more sensitive areas? But that's for another time. But that was a very robust part of the discussion.
You know, the other thing that we remember, we had this the couple that's doing the oyster farming in the
Rocky and Jen Rockovich.
Yeah, yeah. Right, yeah, right. And they're looking at cleaning up the inner harbor, right, which is going to be huge.
Mm-hmm.
I wonder how much of that's going to affect, or if there's any effect from that.
Well, I think, yeah, I mean, it's easy to say the water quality around Vashon is relatively good because, you know, it's so much water and it's so deep and it's so cold.
So much flow.
And there's so much flow going on. But the reality is, you know, there's just a constant sort of feeding into that And that's the concern, I think, of why you look at Vashon as a total ecosystem.
Right.
And you start saying, well, wait a minute, you know, what we're pumping into Puget Sound, you know, what Kitsap Peninsula, what Des Moines, what, mm-hmm. you know, Federal mm-hmm. Way, what Commencement Bay and Tacoma. You know, I mean, yeah, Puget Sound is 600 feet deep. There's a lot of water out there, but it's also got limits to what it can absorb.
Mm-hmm. And we have a heck of a lot more shoreline than most of those.
Yeah, Kevin, go ahead.
So interesting, we were in Canada, and it used to be that in Canada you could just pump your holding tank overboard. Mm-hmm. It has now changed. And, you know, we'd always complained in the States that all those Canadians and all those boaters are pumping their poop right into the water that flows into South Puget Sound. They make the point that, you know, the waste stream from humans these days includes a lot of stuff that can be kind of bad, like medications that, you know, go through our body. And the effect on wildlife and fisheries and things like that. So, you know, the whole notion of, yeah, we might have relatively clean water on Vashon is a good thing. The other hand, you know, I think I'd like the whole ecosystem approach, Bruce, that you mentioned. Yeah, we, you know, what do we do to really restore the healthy ecosystem that we need to go forward here? And warmer temperatures make things even more challenging, you know, in that regard. With the climate change and warming seawater, more and more stuff blooms. And if we feed it with more and more stuff, it just makes the problem even worse. Mm-hmm.
I think the question is, the county has not proven scientifically that there's a demonstrable link between the non-designated MRA areas and water quality. Reason the MRA was created is they surveyed everywhere, and they were like, hey, we got bad water quality here, so we got to do something about it, right? They didn't say we have bad water quality everywhere. They said we have bad water quality here. And then they instituted this, and the water quality got better. So yeah. If there's no link right now between, you know, poor water quality and what's happening, the question is this the right solution for what doesn't seem to be a tangibly defined problem?
Right. And we have Captain Joe's in the studio getting ready for his show.
The whole subject of water quality, especially in the navigable waters of the United States, which are the waterways in which ships actually ply and which bring in and take out the products of our commerce, is one which has gone on since the beginning of settlement in this country back in the 1500s. I come from the Chesapeake Bay part of the world, and it is only within the last 50 years that a multi-state compact was put together to deal with that problem. And one of the biggest things that they found was the runoff of agricultural activities into the Chesapeake Bay was causing a great deal of the difficulty. And by requiring people to build berms along the edges of the where they have agricultural activity has done a great deal to improve the situation in Chesapeake Bay. I am, of course, very jealous that of the way that we take care of Puget Sound. Mm. And I'm jealous of it as a mariner, as a person who lives on the edge of that water. Mm-hmm. And I'm also a firm believer that even the smallest efforts that all of us can take can make a huge difference in how we make this happen, because that's exactly what happened in the Chesapeake Bay.
Hmm. So every little bit helps, right?
Every little bit, okay. Every little bit. And people say, well, Captain Joe, it doesn't really make that much difference, but in fact it does, and it is kind of the ripple effect as well. This whole business about trying to figure out the scientific basis is all well and good, and we are providing livelihoods for a number of people who are in those businesses, and I'm all in favor of that. But at the same time, I'm very much in favor of teaching small children how they can be a part. And that, for example, is why we do the low tide celebration here every year on this island, is to bring kids into learning how they can be a small part of taking care of this wonderful land with which we have been entrusted.
Right. Mm-hmm. And then there was one more thing, because it's a drum I've been beating for years. And finally, Councilmember Mosqueda seems to have made some traction on finding out where in the heck does Vashon Island's lodging tax go every year?
Ooh.
Because we raise a significant amount of money through lodging tax, and it just disappears into, as Captain Joe says, Mother King. And so she has started to hound dog that, and or excuse me, bird dog that, and there is a chance that that money may come back around and help us save Strawberry Festival.
Well, you know, in fact, Captain Joe, your captain's quarters out there at the lighthouse, I mean, or the lightkeeper's quarters. Some of that goes.
Yes.
Yeah.
Generates a great deal of that lodging tax. Yes. Right.
Yeah, but where does it go? And the King County, apparently King County has admitted that it's gone to the stadium district. It's gone to here. It's gone to there. But none of it seems to have made its way back to Vashon, which it should be doing.
Well, I will throw in one more quick thing about King County. We have what's known as a PEG fee that's being paid by Comcast, people who have Comcast. And that there's a little portion of that that's supposed to come to low-power radio stations like KVSH and Voice of Vashon. But guess what? King County was absorbing all of that and was not sharing it with us.
Yeah.
And that was brought to their attention. And guess what? We're now getting some of that back money, which that's one of the things that helped pay for all of this new gear that we have.
Yeah, Councilmember Mosqueda, you know, we can, it takes her a minute, you know, it takes her. She's got quite a long list, but I appreciate the fact that she is helping us find these nickels and dimes that the county just seems to stash away.
It just kind of goes away into the county coffers, doesn't it?
So we have sort of created that situation or helped to create that situation ourselves, because we are very active in pointing out that we take care of ourselves out here on the island.
Exactly right.
And we are very prideful that, in fact, that is what exactly happens, that when we have something going on out here, we tend to take care of it ourselves. And yet we are part of the county, which is run by Mother King, who knows what's best for all of us. And so there's got to be a way that we can do exactly what Amy is talking about, and that is to recover some of that for our own use. But in the meantime, we keep on having our own pick up the tires and scan the beaches for every single piece of styrofoam.
Yeah, yeah.
And all of those things that we do for ourselves.
You know, you missed one of the things that that Amy was talking about, though. She said that some of this road tax is going to be coming back to us big time. And it looks like a pretty good chunk of that, which is really, really good.
But
great.
We've vigilant. I urge constant vigilance around that.
Oh, absolutely. Yeah. Absolutely.
Oh, I do, too. Yeah. And not only around that, but about many other things.
Exactly, when it comes to King County, for
Price of liberty and roads you can drive on. Constant vigilance.
There you go, exactly. Well, hey, we got about a minute to go here. And next week, Craig, you're going to be hosting next week, right?
Yeah, next week we've got an environmental attorney who is not going to be talking to us about the environment. One of our island activists and treasurers, Laura Wishick, is going to be with us, and one of the founders of the Land Trust. But she's going to be talking to us about immigration. She's been helping out with the immigrants on the island, and will tell us a little bit about the law and tell us some of the sad and horrific stories and some of the other successes, some of the wonderful, happy stories.
Exactly.
So we look forward to Laura's presence next week.
Well, so about out of time, I need to remind folks that
One more from Kevin.
Oh, sorry, Kevin.
And also next week is the day to get your ballot, you know, to make sure your ballots are in. King County recommends you get your ballot like today. So go for it.
All right, that's good. And Captain Joe will remind us of that on his show, which is coming up at 12:30, about half an hour from now. So I'd like to invite you all to stick around for that. But in the meantime, for Craig, for Amy, Bruce, Kevin, and recently Captain Joe and myself, Truman, we do appreciate you all listening, and we look forward to you joining us again next week for the Brown Briefly.